Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's Auction Rules for Indirect Contention Sets webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, new GT of the Communications Manager. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect pod called Questions to the Presenter. Dial-in numbers can be found at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The teleconference entry code is GDD. To enter the phone queue, dial star 1. To exit the queue, dial star 2. Please make sure that your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now I'd like to turn it over to Russ Weinstein, Senior Manager, GTLD Operations.
Thanks, Nicole. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all those on the phone. Thanks for joining us. This is Russ Weinstein. I'm going to talk through indirect contention and the auction rules and auction format associated with indirect contention sets. This morning we'll begin first starting off with some background and terminology about indirect contention and contention as a whole. Then we'll talk through some of the key challenges and considerations that went into the auction design, and then we'll talk through the proposed solution. And I'll turn it over to Grant Nakata, who will walk through several examples to help illustrate how the auction rules would come to life. And then we'll open it up for question and answer at the end. This deck is a very similar version to the deck that we posted for public comment back in mid-November. The public comment period is open right now and ends January 13th. So we invite any questions from this webinar or from the rules or materials posted there to be submitted to the public comment forum. Without that, we'll go ahead and get started. So just want to start off with the basics. Contention is direct contention when more than one application for the same or confusingly similar string. So in this example, you see there's an A and a B application, and they're linked together in direct contention. And then we have indirect contention, which occurs when two applications are both in direct contention with a third, but not with one another. So you see that A is in direct contention with B, B is in direct contention with C, but A and C are not in direct contention. They're in indirect contention with one another. So that's what we're going to focus on in this webinar today. So the potential outcomes of indirect contention sets are what we're terming feasible sets. So these are the potential outcomes that could be delegated into the root. So A and C can coexist in the root zone together, so they can both prevail from an indirect contention set, but B must be by itself in this contention set. It must prevail on its own. It can't coexist with A or C because of the direct contention relationships. So in this scenario, the feasible set is either A and C or B. On the next slide, this is just another example of how the sets might shape out. And this is more realistic to how they have come to be so far. You'll see there's multiple applications for that A position. Then there's one application in that B position and one application in the C position. So either A1 and C can coexist, A2 and C could coexist, or B can stand alone. But neither the A's cannot coexist with each other. So as of today, we have four contention sets that fit this model, and this totals about 30 applications. as of today. We had five, but one of the sets previously resolved earlier this year. So the four sets that we have today are the Game and Games set, the Web and Webs set, the Sport and Sports set, and the Shopping and the IDN set. So pretty small universe relative to the entire population of 233 contention sets, and a fairly relatively low number of applications affected overall, but they do require a fairly unique solution, and that's what we're presenting here today. The AJB describes contention and indirect contention, and it describes auctions in section 4.3.1. It doesn't go into any specific details about indirect contention and how those would be resolved via an auction, but it does give us some guidance here in this paragraph that we've highlighted. You can see when a sufficient, the first part of this talks about how an ascending clock auction is the method. And so when an auctioneer successively increases the prices associated with applications within the contention set, and the respective applicants indicate their willingness to pay these prices, as the prices rise, applicants will successively choose to exit from the auction. So that describes an ascending clock auction, essentially. And then it goes on to say, when a sufficient number of applications have been eliminated so that no direct contentions remain, i.e. the remaining applications are no longer in contention with one another, and all the relevant strings can be delegated as TLDs, the auction will be deemed to conclude. So a few key takeaways from this: the will successively increase the prices, that's the ascending clock method. Applicants agree to pay up to their bid, which is their willingness to pay, and the applicants would never be in a position where they'd have to pay more than their max willingness to pay or their max bid. And then once eliminated, there's no revival. So those were factors that went into our decision. The other big element that comes out of this is that it does imply that multiple applications can prevail from a single contention set because of those indirect contention relationships. So what we're looking to do is break the direct contention relationships and identify those that are left standing, so to speak. So when thinking about putting together an auction solution that'll solve these challenges, we had to look at those challenges. And what they are is we had to respect the contention relationship, so honoring the difference between direct and indirect contention, adhering to the AGB principles that I just described, using ascending clock, using making sure that applicants never are in a position where they'd have to pay more than their bid, trying to ensure that the revival principle. So that would be if someone in the A position in that ABC scenario dropped out early, but the C position ended up winning, we don't want to create a situation where A has a claim that, hey, I'm not in direct contention with C, I should be allowed to move forward at a later point in time. So what we wanted to do was capture that that situation and avoid it when we're designing the solution. Timing, so we wanted to make sure that all applicants start together and that we considered multiple options. You know, do we run mini auctions within the set? But you get into issues of fairness of which side should go first. So a lot of ins and outs went into this. We wanted to make sure it was clear to the applicants as to what they're bidding on at all times and what the dynamic looked like that they were bidding on. And then the other challenge is cost allocation. We think we've devised a real clear way to break the contention relationships over the course of the auction. And then the biggest challenge after that is then how do you allocate the cost of those winning prices to the remaining, to the winning bidders. And we think we've done that. As I mentioned, we've been working on this for quite some time, in the background mostly. This is the first time we've come out and posted something for or applicant in public viewing, and that was with the public comment announcement back in mid-November. But leading up to this, we considered multiple options, everything from sealed bid, ascending clock, using different hybrids of blending sealed bids and ascending clock, various pricing and winner determination formulas, cost allocation formulas. But what we settled on here, we think, is truest to the AGB. It's most consistent with the existing framework for direct contention set auctions, and we think it's the fairest and cleanest solution. So we'll go ahead and talk through that now. So the solution we're proposing is an ascending clock auction, still using the second price auction methodology described in the AGB and used for the direct contention set auctions. And the one kind of delta from the direct contention auctions is this concept of a feasible set. So we're going to determine winners based on comparing feasible sets. So we'll look at bids, the sum of the bids for A plus C, and compare those to B, essentially. So this slide basically summarizes the sequence of events after the bidding round ends. It's kind of an order of operations, if you will. And it's a summary of Clause 34, essentially, in the indirect auction rules document that's published on the microsite and published for public comment. So I'll talk through it now. The first item is to identify, after the bidding round ends, the auction manager will assess, did any application meet the end of round price? And if so, it remains in the auction. It's an enduring application. If you met the end of round price in any particular round, you cannot be eliminated, and you'll go on to either become a winning application or to the next round. The next decision point is if an application X did not meet the end of round price and an application Y is positioned the same or better than application X and it outbid application X, then application X would be eliminated. So if you remember that picture where I had A1, A2, B, and C, so if application A1 is X and application A2 is Y, they're positioned, A and A1 and A2 are positioned the same. If A2 bid more than A1, A1 would be eliminated. And then the third condition is when neither condition 1 or 2 has been satisfied for application X, and application X is part of a feasible set that remains eligible to bid in the auction, then we'll compare the sum of the bids within that feasible set to the end of round price and to the other remaining feasible sets. So this would be that comparing the A plus C to the end of round price and to the bid of B, the other feasible set. As mentioned earlier, any application that's deemed eligible for the next round is considered an enduring application, and that's terminology we use in the auction rules document. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Grant Nakata to explain some of these examples that are posted, and we'll start off with the most basic contention set that you can see on the screen.
Thanks, Russ. As Russ was mentioning, I would like to walk through several examples. We selected three from the seven examples that we included in the presentation deck posted in the public comment. I think we feel like these three will provide a good overall example of the auction mechanics. So that said, I think this is just another example, as in the previous slide, of what a kind of a basic set would look like. And the first example will follow suit. One thing to note is in this first example, we'll show a few notations, one, two, and a three near the bottom of the comments, and that's just to help correlate back to those conditions that Russ mentioned, as well as auction rules clause 34A, B, and C. So in the first round, taking this example, you can see the end around price of $400,000. Each bidder, they met the end around price, and thus by clause, our condition one or clause 34A, had placed a continued bid and be an enduring application. And this is consistent with how a direct contention only auction would take place. In the second round, taking a look at the second round, you can see that bidder B met the end round price, and again, by condition one, would be an enduring application. One thing to point out here is A1 did not meet the end around price, while A2, who was positioned the same, bid more, and by condition 2, A1 would be eliminated. A2 and C combined as a feasible set to bid more than the end around price, and by condition 3, they would also be an enduring application. Taking a look at round three, you can see that neither applications or feasible sets have met the end around price. The auction manager would then determine that this is the final round of the auction and conclude with which feasible set maximizes the sum of the bids. In this case, B with $1.4 million is greater than the $1.3 combined of A2 and C. Thus, there's no cost allocation issue with this example, and B would pay $1.3 million. And maybe I should also just point out these are just notional purposes only. Before I jump into example two, maybe I can just pause for a minute to see if there's any questions or any clarifications that I need to make regarding that first example. If not, I'll just proceed. No questions. Great. So example two, very similar, still working with the basic feasible set that Russ showed. And in round one, very similar, A1, A2, and B met the end around price, so they would be enduring applications. And C, although did not meet the end around price, would be considered a part of a feasible set of A1 or C or A2 and C. During. Then again, in this example, as a result of round two, A2 and B have met the end around price. Consider a continued bid. Would be an enduring application. And again, as A1 did not meet the end around price, while A2 positioned the same, bid more, A1 would be eliminated. And as a similar case for C, as in the previous round, although C did not bid the end around price, would be considered in the feasible set as the sum of the bids of A2 and C did meet the end around price. Now round three, as a result, you can see neither feasible set or application bid the end around price. Again, the auction manager would deem this is the final round of the auction and determine the sum of the bids, which maximizes the sum of the bids. In this case, there is a cost allocation issue, in which case A2 and C would be determined winning applications, and they would each pay a proportion it's proportioned to eliminate B, which in this case is $1.1 million for A2, and C would pay $100,000. Sure. So A2 actually at that time as well, the auction manager determines that as it eliminated A1, it would at least pay the $600,000. It wouldn't pay any less than $600,000 if it prevailed, and because it eliminated B as a feasible set, it's taking that proportion. So the $1.2 plus the 200,000 with C, that's 1.4, which A2 would be liable for the 85%, and C is paying roughly the 15% of B's allocation, if that makes sense. But does anyone have any questions or anyone need to clarify example 2? Pause for a minute. So now the much more complex set we're looking at, this, as you can see on the screen, was made to mirror the shop, shopping, and the IDN contention set. So in this example, shop, excluding Commercial Connect, would be those in the A position. Commercial Connect would be in the B position. Amazon's IDN would be in the C position. And then Foggy Beach as D1 and Unit Registry as D2. Another way to look at this is taking the feasible sets. So these are the outcomes that potentially happen after the auction, whether it's B or D2, A1, C, and D1, henceforth. Those are the potential outcomes of what can occur. For example 3, see that as a result of round 1, all have bid the end of round price, excluding C. But as in similar example, C, although it didn't meet the end of round price, is part of a feasible set and would continue as some of those bids have met the end of round price. End of round. So now, as a result of round 2, the end of round price of 900,000, A1 and A2, they did the end of round price, their enduring applications, this is the same, D1 and D2 have also met the end of round price and their enduring applications. You'll notice B did not meet the end of round price with 750,000, and it's also had bid less than A1 and A2, which are positioned better than B, in which case by condition 2 or clause 34B would be eliminated from the auction. Subsequently, as direct contention would be broken from C, those applicants are notified that B has been eliminated and C would have prevailed. Also at that time, we notify that C winning payment would be $1. One thing to point out is as C wasn't the factor of the reason why B is eliminated, C's winning price would be $1. The auction then continues almost as if two separate auctions, A1 and A2, and D1 and D2. At the end of this round, a $1.5 million end of round price. You can see each one of those bidders have hit the end of round price and are enduring applications. Then in the fourth round of $2.2 million end of round price, A2 bid the end of round price and D1 bid the end of round price, while respectively A1 did not meet the end of round price, while A2 is positioned the same. And in D's case, D1 did the end of round price, D2 did not, as they were positioned the same, D2 would be eliminated. That's the final round of the auction. At that time, they're notified of the winning payment, so A2 would be paying specifically A1's price, A2 would be paying A1's price, and E1 would be paying D2's price of $2 million. That one was a little bit more complex, so I'll pause for a minute to see if anyone has any questions. And if not, again, I'll just pass it back to Russ to go over the next steps.
Great. Thank you, Grant. So we'll check in to see if there's any questions on the phone, but first I'll talk through the next steps here. So as I mentioned in the intro, we have an open public comment period right now. It opened in mid-November and is open until January 13th. So if there's any, please review the documents that we've posted and provide any comments or feedback that you may have, and we'll review those. Then the next step would be for us to review and analyze the comments and post a summary and analysis report, as we do with all public comment periods here at ICANN, and with that provide an updated, if necessary, or final version or implementation version of the auction rules for indirect contention sets. And then immediately following that, we would begin scheduling these four sets as they become eligible for auction. So ideally, our timeline would be that we finalize the auction rules sometime between February and early March, and then we get notifications going in early to mid-March, with the first auction as early as middle May. So that would be the sequence of events following this public comment period. So we'll check in with the operator and see if there's any calls on the phone, because I don't see any questions in the chat pod.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one. You'll be asked to record your first and last name clearly to ask your question. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Once again, to ask a question, please press star, then one. One moment. At this time, I'm showing no one queued up for questions.
Okay. So I think with that, we'll conclude the webinar and appreciate everyone's time. And if there's any questions, please go ahead and either post them in the public comment forum or you can always submit questions to the New GTLD Customer Service Center at customerservice@icann.org. Thank you very much, and good afternoon.
This concludes today's conference. All participants can disconnect at this time. Thank you.